Youth ministry has always needed to adapt and adjust to changes in the mainstream culture. With the advent of the Me Too movement and our growing knowledge of the nature and extent of sexual abuse, youth workers must be thinking about how to best engage with students in ways that lead to healthy relationship building. Is it ever proper to give a student a hug? What about car rides, lunches, or having one-on-one meetings with kids? What are the borders and boundaries we need to enlist to ensure that none of us or our volunteers cross lines that would thrill the enemy, undermine ministries, or do harm to the kids who have been entrusted to our care? Our good friend Mark Penner joins us to offer wisdom and to help us answer the question, to hug or not to hug? How do we love kids well in our Me Too culture? On this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Well, we've got a tough topic to talk about today. It's a necessary topic, but it's a tough topic based on what's happening in our culture. And Jason, I don't know if I've ever told you this story before or not, but a few years ago, Tick Long, who was running the National Youth Workers Convention at the time, got a hold of me. And, you know, we would always talk through, Marv Penner, who's joining us today, knows this routine. We would talk through what kind of seminars you want to do. And we landed on one of them being Wisdom for a Young Youth Worker. So I put this whole thing together, was building my PowerPoint, and the last thing that I had to put in was a picture on the title page of a youth worker. So I do what any good presenter does, right? Any good researcher, I guess. I Google image searched youth worker or youth pastor, I guess is what I used. And what came up, about a third of the photos that showed up were mugshots. I mean, it was tough to look at. It just made me pause. My jaw kind of dropped, and I realized, man, we're living in a world where, you know, there's so much brokenness that youth workers are really getting themselves in trouble. And so part of my seminar was to talk about, you know, building borders and boundaries. And what's happened since then in our Me Too culture is even those who aren't indulging brokenness in ways that are inappropriate in terms of relationships with students, and I'm thinking here primarily about matters of privacy and sexuality, you know, crossing borders and boundaries there. But now we have to be ultra careful, even with the best intentions. So, have you thought about that a lot, Jason? I mean, you're out there. You know, we had.
It's a conversation that's been going on for the last year with a lot of youth workers here locally.
Yeah.
You know, what's right, what's wrong? How do we handle ourselves? It seems like the boundaries have shifted further. That we just have to be much more aware than ever before.
Yeah, and we here at CPYU, you know, we're starting our 30th year here. And for the first time ever, I mean, we've always had to carry insurance. We've always had to carry liability insurance. And for the first time ever, our insurance company would not write us a policy unless we were all, you know, background checked, fingerprinted, jumped through a bunch of hoops and things with our state. And we also had to take, what was that thing, Chris, that we had to take? It was like a three-hour...
The mandated reporter training.
Oh, yeah, mandated reporter training, which is necessary. I get that. You know, we have to do that. But all that to say, man, what a shift. I mean, these are the things that are happening in our culture right now, and so we have to be aware of it. So yeah. We've asked Marv Penner to come on with us today. Hey, Marv, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Yeah.
I agree. This is not a topic... I'm looking forward to talking about. I would way rather be talking about 100 fun things you can do with duct tape. you're right. It absolutely is necessary. And if you want to refine your search, your Google search just a little bit, Google Youth Pastor News. I did that in preparation for some teaching I was doing recently. And I would say 90% of the pictures are mugshots.
Yeah, that's, man. Yeah, and it seems like it pops up every day. I mean, anybody who works with kids now, you know, teachers, we see it with teachers here locally. It just seems like not a week goes by, huh, Chris, in the newspaper, teacher, band director, pastor, youth pastor, which is evidence of our brokenness, and which is evidence of our need for, you know, being aware of our brokenness and living lives where we do build in borders and boundaries. But, you know, what we're going to talk about today, man, it has changed. The kinds of things that I think, Marv, you're going to recommend that we not engage in used to be normalized in youth ministry. So, Marv, just to give you all a little background if you're listening, Marv, and I guess since you're hearing my voice, you are listening. But Marv, this last weekend, put together a seminar that he gave for the first time at the Canadian Youth Workers Convention. Your first one where, Marv? In Kelowna this last weekend?
Yes.
BC?
Yep. Out on the West Coast.
Yeah. And Marv had called me a couple of weeks before and was telling me about developing this. I was pretty excited to hear about it. And the title of it is, we've gotten his notes here, so we have an idea what's coming, and it's good. To Hug or Not to Hug? Subtitled Loving Kids Well in Our Me Too Culture. So Marv's a longtime friend. He's on associate staff here at CPYU. He's running the Coalition for Youth Ministry Excellence up there, which we've talked about before. They've launched that since we chatted last, and that thing hit the ground running in terms of an educational opportunity. But one of the things I love about Marv is that he is a great thinker and strategizer who has years and years of experience in youth ministry. And his, I really think Marv's best great thinking and strategizing comes on the difficult issues, and this is one of them. So we're going to jump right into this, and I know youth workers need to hear this. I know youth workers need to ask questions about this. We are on Facebook Live right now as we record this, so for those who are joining us live, I'll try to track with any questions you might have as we start to work through this. We have quite a few people on there right now. I don't promise to get to all the questions, but I want to hear from you, Marv. So set the stage. Jason and I, Chris, will interact with you. We want to hear what you have to say on this because we need to hear this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for this opportunity, Walt. I'm grateful that I can share some of the things, not only that I've thought through, but in preparation for the teaching that I knew I was going to be doing on this topic. I went online specifically to the Download Youth Ministry community and just asked, what are your thoughts on this issue? What are the policies and the practices that your ministry has in place, that your church mandates, that your insurance company is insisting on, et cetera? Got a lot of great feedback online, a wide range, you know, from people who have really tight policies, lots of training, and other organizations that really just kind of have, you know, be wise, use common sense. Got some strong reactions that sadly I kind of agree with. And the strong reactions were reactions to the sense of, and I want to be really, really careful with the words that I use here today, but the injustice of all of us having to adjust our ministry practices to the choices of a few. You know, a lot of people talking about the fact, and I agree, that healthy touch is something that every kid desperately needs, and especially with the brokenness that's going on in a lot of families these days, where dads are unavailable to kids, where moms are preoccupied. Very often kids are struggling with attachment kinds of issues. And so healthy touch is something that is so necessary for kids. And yet as youth workers, we're not in a position very often to offer that kind of healthy touch. So you know, we do need to talk about this today, perhaps as never before. I think there are some new reasons why we need to give some focused attention to this. I'm hoping that just raising the issue to a level of consciousness, kind of making it part of the conversation that youth workers are having, will create a safer environment without compromising what it means to love kids well. You'll notice in the subtitle, Walt, that I created there, I subtitled it "How to Love Kids Well in this Me Too culture. So we have to think not only about what we shouldn't be doing anymore, but what we should be doing. There are all sorts of ways that we can affirm and value and love kids well that don't involve getting close to any borders or boundaries. And we need to be thinking about those. We can't just stop touching and not do anything to sort of replace that. And so we need to be responsive to the reality of our culture and yet proactive in terms of addressing those relational needs that kids have.
Marv, you, in your notes, and I went through these this morning. Thanks for sending them along. But you, right at the beginning, you listed some reasons why we need to have this conversation. So you just mentioned some of them. Kids need love and healthy affection, perhaps more than ever before. Increasingly, kids have baggage that can make physical touch confusing. It is no longer an opposite gender issue. Insurance companies are concerned about this. Careful.
I
want to ask about that. That's the one I want to stop on because, you know, I used to say to youth workers, you know, if you're a male youth worker, don't ride alone in the car with a female youth worker or with a female student or a female
right.
youth worker, for that matter, who's not your wife. I think we need those good safety borders and boundaries built in. But, you know, now it's not, and I've talked to that, it's not an opposite gender issue.
Right. I mean, we've seen what's happened in the church. It's been in the news for the last 3 or 4 months. And frankly, the stuff that's gotten the biggest headlines over the last 6 months has been same gender stuff. And so we need to just be really very, very conscious of the fact that even what may appear to be safe and what may not occur to a youth worker as being a potentially compromising situation now can be. There's a whole nother set of lenses that people are looking through. There's a whole nother set of realities that kids are living with. You know, we used to think, you know, the red flag goes up when a youth pastor has a sense that a student of the opposite gender may be developing, let's call it a crush on them. Perhaps today we need to be aware of the fact that that same gender students could be developing a crush on a youth worker, and so that combination of a personal baggage and need for affection that whole combination of things has now meant that we have to be careful at every level.
Yeah. You know, it, just to take this a step further, I'd be interested what you might say to this, but just the diligence that's required, opposite gender, same gender. Now we have students who are living in a world where personally they understand and they have embraced something that's non-binary in terms of gender. You know, gender fluidity, we hear about that.
Exactly.
Now, you know, on my side of this understanding, you know, I would go to the scriptures, and I've had these discussions with people. I'll continue to have these discussions with people, I'm sure, and I know there's people who are listening who would push back on this, but my understanding as I read the scriptures is there is a gender binary that's present at creation and declared by God, made by God intentionally, purposefully, and declared good. However, I understand, too, that the cultural context for kids is they're living in a world where the binary is being diminished. An article just ran in Teen Vogue magazine, an op-ed piece, where a gal, the op-ed writer, gave recommendations to teenage girls on how to erase and diminish gender binaries in a variety of different ways. So that's real, and kids are embracing that, all right? That's their self-understanding. That makes it even more complex for us in youth ministry when it comes to this issue, and that's where I'm thinking, man, we've got to just put a stake in the ground in terms of we will do this, we will not do this in terms of our interactions with kids. Have you thought about that? You know,
I certainly have, Walt, and you know, I agree that this is becoming an increasingly complex issue. But when it comes to the subject at hand today, I think the bigger issue is the imbalance of power that's there, and just a recognition that whether we're talking about an opposite gender or a same gender interaction, there are lines in all of those contexts. So, you know, while I certainly share your concerns and frankly your perspective on the issue of gender fluidity, I think that the way we're dealing with this topic today has to cover every youth worker, no matter what their perspective is on that issue. Inappropriate relationships between an adult and a minor are simply taboo. We have to take active, proactive steps to make sure that they don't happen. And that's my concern right now, is the safety of all kids.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Oh, yeah. And I agree with you on that. And let me just go down a little trail off to the side. And Jason, you may want to weigh in here, because I'm sure you've got some questions that are burning, you know, in your mind right now. But you talked right there about the imbalance of power. I get that. And I agree with that. And I am fully on board with the fact that, you know, youth workers have, where lines have been crossed, there has been a clear abuse of power in a relationship. Manipulation, deception, all kinds of things that go on there. But let me ask this. In a culture where Christianity, you know, basically what we're working to communicate through our ministries, where Christianity is increasingly, I'm not sure what words I want to choose, looked down upon, frowned upon, seen as a power play, should we be aware as well, and tell me if I'm going down a bad road here, but should we be aware as well that there may be times when, in a response to that imbalance of power, power from a student might be deliberately exercised to compromise, you know, what we're trying to do. Do you understand what I'm saying there? In other words, a young person could actually be on a mission. I mean, I really believe this, that in the kind of world we live in today, it's not just your intent, it's a young person's intent. And kids could actually step out, or adults could actually step out and say, you know, I'm going to destroy you. I'm going to shipwreck you in this because of the cultural climate we live in.
Yeah, I have no problem with that being a possibility.
That's what I'm saying.
But again, because the sort of the garden variety abuses of power are so common, I don't think we really need to worry too much about, you know, the rare possibility that may happen, because there is so much actual misuse of power that's going on. There's so many adults who do struggle with their own issues of sexuality, which leads them to a vulnerability around kids, that we just have to be aware that it's kind of the main issue we need to be talking about, which simply is that in the intimacy of a ministry relationship, where kids trust deeply, where there's a ton of shared experiences, there's a ton of opportunity for inappropriateness to begin to germinate and then grow if it's nurtured. We just need to be vigilant. That's all there's to it. And, you know, my primary motive in raising this issue is that I've been on the other side of this topic. When I did my doctoral research, I focused on the issue of sexual abuse and marriage. What I was specifically looking at was the way a sexual abuse victim or survivor approaches marriage. And so I immersed my life in the stories of over 100 couples where sexual abuse was part of their marital dynamic. You know, sexual abuse as a child. And I've seen firsthand the devastation. I've seen the deep, deep wounds that this leaves. And if I can do anything to protect the kid from that kind of an outcome, I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do it proactively. I'm going to do it enthusiastically, maybe even aggressively, because I don't want any kid to have to emerge from their adolescence with a story of sexual impropriety as being part of their sexual history. So we all need to stack hands on this.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's sorry good. For the rant there.
No, but, no, that's good. That's
you know, that's part of what motivates me here, and it drives me pretty heavily.
Yeah, well, thanks for that. We need to take a break. And
all right.
After the break, we're going to come back and we're going to talk through some of what you actually are communicating to folks in terms of some practical responses here. And I hear you saying, just across the board, let's make sure we're the ones who step up and build the borders and boundaries so that we protect
right.
kids in good and godly ways. So let's.
Hey, well, yeah. can I know you're going to a break, but can I just make one point before we go to the practical stuff? And that is that when kids are broken, when they're intruded upon in a faith context, when this is happening in the context of the church or a ministry organization, a camp, where faith is what defines us, there's an additional layer of brokenness that comes. We all know about the complexity of brokenness that comes with sexual intrusion in the first place, but when it's done in the name of Jesus, kids walk away with a spiritual brokenness, a confusion that comes about as a result of that, that cannot be minimized. And so while all sexual abuse is inappropriate, when it's done under the umbrella of the church and in the name of Jesus, then we have a whole nother complication. And it brings to mind the words of Jesus when he says, if anyone would cause one of these little ones to stumble, it would be better for a millstone to be hung around their neck. So this now enters the world of causing kids to struggle spiritually. And that's something that I don't think can be overlooked in this conversation. So sorry, I didn't get your permission.
No, that's good.
But,
yeah, you asked a question, but you didn't let me answer. You
oh,
owe me
sorry.
One. No, that's good. That's good. But I love what you just said, and I want to talk about that just a little bit more when we come back from the break, because that is so very true. And we're seeing that worked out in our culture right now in some pretty specific ways. So
yeah, we
want
to
draw attention to that. So let's take a break,
yeah.
And we'll
Thanks,
be right
Walt.
Back. Yep.
All right.
I want to tell you about one of our best-kept resource secrets here at CPYU. For the last 14 years, we've produced a one-minute daily radio spot called Youth Culture Today that's carried on over 800 radio stations in North America and which can be listened to through our online home at cpyu.org. Recently, we've relaunched, rebooted, and rebranded Youth Culture Today so that it will reach more parents and youth workers with timely and practical tips on how to help kids navigate the challenges and opportunities of living in today's world. We encourage you to visit our homepage at cpyu.org to experience a one-minute daily dose of youth culture that will better prepare you to reach the kids you know and love. Or search for Youth Culture Today on your favorite podcast platform. Youth Culture Today is one more free resource we've created to help and support you as youth workers and parents. Well, we're back with Mark Penner, and we're talking about some much-needed new material Marv's developed called To Hug or Not to Hug, Loving Kids Well in Our Me Too Culture, which I think is going to be something we're going to have to hear about in a variety of settings, Marv. We need to get you out here to do this, and I'm so appreciative of the fact that you're on here with us. Right before the break, you mentioned that when these kinds of things are done in the name of Christ, the damage goes to even a deeper level. And And I heard that. And I'm just going to mention, I said before the break, I want to mention, if people have not been tracking with what's happening here in the state of Pennsylvania, and even some of what's happening in the state of Maryland right now, which has been documented in an online documentary on Netflix, I think, called The Keepers, you need to check this out. And this is relates to what's happening in the Catholic Church. Now, my mention of this is not at all an indication that this is the only place this is happening. It's just that the curtain's been pulled back on a system of systemic abuse in the Catholic Church, and our state attorney's general's office here has really been pushing on this. I think a 5-year investigative case is now coming to light, so you can read about that. But what's especially horrifying, a couple of examples of this, are in cases where there was systemic abuse by priests, and even abuse done by multiple priests who were sort of in this together. They were marking boys by having, they would give them the gift of a cross to wear around their neck. And this cross was then used to identify kids who were easy marks for abuse. Have you guys heard that part of the story? I mean, it is, that was part of the report that came out. And I'll share this as well. If you watch The Keepers on Netflix, and this is where we get a little bit forward here with this, and I apologize for this, but this is what was happening. There was a priest, at least one priest in a girls' high school that was continually abusing the same girls, and this is documented in The Keepers, who was actually justifying his actions to the girls as and I won't get into what exactly he was requiring the girls to do, but you can imagine part of putting the Holy Spirit into the young woman. So there was this, not just doing this in the name of Christ, but actually making it almost sacramental in a Catholic way, that the damage that's done when you listen to these women talk now as 60-year-old adults, it is horrifying. And Marv is right on with what he's saying about this. So I just wanted to mention that and point people to these things, The Keepers and then the Attorney General's report here in the state of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, just the very fact that as youth workers, we claim to be a representative of Jesus, that, you know, we're loving as Jesus has called us to love. We become the voice that communicates the truth of the scripture to them. And when there's an inconsistency between what we claim and what we live, that may represent just the biggest hindrance to the next generation generally. And when it's in an area that's as sensitive as crossing lines sexually with kids, the damage is just absolutely devastating. And you know, as youth workers, we need to remember that absolutely everything we do in our ministry, the way we present ourselves in social media, the way we interact with kids, the way we deal with stress and tension, the way we live out our marriages, the way we parent our kids, all of that is being observed by the students that we care for. And they are constantly asking, does this line up with what he or she is teaching? And when there's a disconnect between what they see or experience and what they hear, that creates for many kids an insurmountable barrier for them to embrace faith fully.
Marv, you're bringing up something that for the longest of times I've spoken to other counselors and other individuals that have worked closely with the church. And one of the things that in the last 5 years I've heard a lot of conversation around is there needs to be, the church is not always the safest place. We want it to be the safest place. We want it to be this place where individuals are coming to know and grow in their relationship with Jesus. But also it can be an unsafe place because sometimes there's not as many borders and boundaries. There's not as many tools in place to manage risk. And
right.
I really appreciate that in your seminar, one of the things that you're talking about is both risk and then risk management. Would you just dive into that just a little bit? Because I really appreciate the way that you've laid it out here in your seminar.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, let's just acknowledge that anytime we do ministry, there are certain risks that are involved. Basically, I would define risk as any kind of uncertainty that has to do with the outcome of ministry choices that we make, the uncertainty of whether it has the possibility of harming someone or harming our organization or harming us. So risk has to do with that uncertainty around all of that. And of course, relational risk then means that we're choosing to interact with or relate to someone in a way that has potential to cause damage or be destructive to them or to us or to our organization. So risk has to do with that inevitable uncertainty. We face it every single time. You know, we take kids on a canoe trip. We play a new game. There's potential risk. And of course, the fact that we have a team of adult volunteers who are developing relationships with teenagers, there is certainly a level of uncertainty in terms of the potential outcomes there. And that's why we need to be intentional about managing that risk. And so I would define risk management as a process of thinking systematically about all possible risks, problems, disasters before they happen, and then setting up procedures that will avoid those risks or will minimize its impact. And then, of course, part of that management is, do we have a system in place to deal with that risk should the worst case scenario become a reality? The point is that risk is part of youth ministry, and relational risk is part of youth ministry. When I engage in a relationship with a young person, I don't know how that thing's going to end. So what I have to do is be intentional and systematic about ensuring that I reduce that risk. And this is why we say, you know, work with the door open, put a window in your door. Don't be spending one-on-one time with kids where there's no way for it to be monitored or any accountability in place, because that's a way to reduce the level of risk. It very much is a reality. And, when we walk into youth ministry, we walk into risk. That's why we need to manage it.
That's good. Okay, so this is where I'd love to hear about lines that should not be crossed. What are some borders and boundaries we can have? Because this is, when you have the crucial questions about risk management, one of the questions you mentioned is, what will I or we do to prevent something from going wrong or something bad happening? So you've actually come up with I love this list.
Let's just talk about what we can do to make sure that things don't go wrong. Obviously, in the first place, because we're talking about relational risk here, let's make sure that we have vetted and background checked and carefully screened any adults who are going to interact with kids. I'm astounded as I travel across North America at the number of places that still don't have an intentional screening process in place, that still aren't doing background checks, that still aren't requiring people to jump through a few hoops before we put them in relational positions with kids. So, not only the vetting, but then the training. Once we've vetted people, are we training them well? And once we've trained them well, are we giving them the resources to continue to have healthy relationships with kids? And once we've trained and resourced them well, are we monitoring what's going on? I'm aware of several, and granted, they're somewhat larger youth ministries who literally have what would, for all intents and purposes, be a relational lifeguard who's on duty on their youth nights, whose only job it is to kind of keep their eyes open for what could become inappropriate interactions between kids and kids and between staff and kids. And so their job is to walk the corridors, you know, walk the stairwells, watch what's going on in small groups, watch the one-on-one interactions, and just kind of be careful. And then, of course, the key in all of this is, if you've recruited and vetted and screened well, if you've trained and resourced well, if you're monitoring well, then do you have the courage to confront something? Do you have the language to confront a situation that seems like it could possibly be going sideways? And so the courage and the language to confront, and this involves our staff knowing, hey, if we see something that looks like it may not be completely above board, we're going to talk about it. Be prepared for that. It's not accusing. You know, we're not pointing a finger. We're simply asking. We're noticing something here that doesn't look completely right. Let's get it before it gets out of hand.
Let me ask you about that, Marv, because I can imagine for an older youth worker who's been around for years and years, this is one of the advantages that just comes with age. And I think the wisdom that's built over time, it might be easier for them to do the confronting from a position of greater authority just because of age, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
What kind of advice could you give to a young youth worker on that about the best way to confront, or what kind of other relationships and maybe systems should be in place to help them and back them up? Because I can imagine that a younger youth worker could be a little more timid about this just because of inexperience and maybe sometimes the age divide. And I'm speaking from my own experience because I was a young youth worker a long time ago, and I had a situation that was really, really bad that I won't mention here, where there had to be fact-finding and confrontation, and it was with someone who was basically twice my age.
Right.
And some accusations, and that was really, really difficult. So some recommendations for younger youth workers here.
Well, again, if we've had the conversation ahead of time, if we've done the training, if we've said this is something that matters to us, and we will be addressing it when necessary, that, of course, eliminates any kind of surprise or anybody feeling blindsided. The second thing is that the currency that allows us to step into those situations is mutual trust and respect. And what that means is that a young youth worker needs to develop that trust and respect with their, not only their entire team, but with their students as well. Because if that trust and respect is there, and if it goes both ways, then that conversation can be had. And again, the approach is not to come out with guns blazing and accusing, but simply to say, hey, I couldn't help but noticing that you seem to be spending an awful lot of time with one student. You know, it feels like when we are driving back and forth between events and you load up kids in the car, it seems like it's that same student who's always riding shotgun. You know, I'm getting the sense that there may be an imbalanced relationship that's developing there. You know, I'd love to just hear your perspective on that. And so, you know, just raising the issue, constantly reminding people and giving even other youth workers the permission. Hey, if you guys see something that seems out of line, you have permission to address it. You know, let's use the Matthew 18, the Matthew 18 structure, where you go directly to the person first, and if there's no response, then come to someone in leadership and we'll address it. You know, there are structures in place, both biblically and practically, that we can use to make this work.
Yeah. And what I like about you drawing in the Matthew 18 example is that there's a component of that that we sometimes forget, that it's not just confrontational, get out of here. It's confrontational because we want to have a redemptive presence in your life as well. And if there's an issue here, we want to be pastoral with you. But at the same time, we don't want to compromise you know, with our kids, you know, their safety. So, yeah, I love that. I like that.
Yeah. Now, I mean, we can jump in and talk about, you know, just what do those boundaries look like? I think we need to be aware that they happen in a number of categories. It's not just, you know, the physical contact where we just, you know, have to, and probably it would be good to create a list of you know, red light, yellow light, and green light behaviors. You know, certainly there are just some interactions that are clearly red light interactions. You know, a lot of it has to do with who's initiating the touch. You know, there's not much that a youth worker can do. If a kid's been struggling all week and they walk in a small group and walk up to their small group leader and give them a hug and say, "Hey, I'm so glad to be here tonight. I've had a terrible week." You know, that's a very, very different thing than a youth worker initiating full frontals. You know, again, certainly, you know, people will say, you know, anything on the arm, a squeeze, a high five, a fist bump, you know, a hand on the shoulder, as you're greeting kids, you know, that sort of thing, should be okay. But again, even with that, depending on the kind of touch-based baggage that kids come in with, that could represent something that's uncomfortable. And here's where self-awareness is so important for a youth worker. You know, if your habit is to, you know, give kids a squeeze on the shoulder or squeeze their upper arm to welcome them, give them a little side hug or whatever as they come in the door, and you have a sense that a kid's stiffening, that a kid's pushing back, that a kid is recoiling a little bit at that kind of stuff, just make a note. You know, a mental note and just go, I just need to be more cautious with that kid because they don't seem to be comfortable with what may, for all intents and purposes, be an innocent touch. Just awareness. You know, then, you know, things like sitting on somebody's lap or, you know, snuggling up during a movie. A kid's head on your shoulder, you know, those kinds of things are just red lights. That's all there's to it. There's absolutely no room for that. Mm-hmm. In the workshop that I presented last week, I talked about the issue of wrestling, you know, obviously something that guys do. And there was immediately a pushback from a group of youth workers, a group of guys who were there that just said, "Hey, if we couldn't wrestle in our ministry, you know, we'd have nothing. We wrestle with kids all the time. We always thought that was safe touch. But then as we went through the rest of the material, at the end of the workshop, they came up as a group and said, "Hey, we just want you to know that we've been talking a little bit and we are going to tone down our wrestling activity dramatically because, you know, all of us have admitted that there were times when, you know, even inadvertently some inappropriate touch happened. We're going to just need to be careful." So that may become kind of a yellow light activity where you say, "All right, but with careful monitoring, you know, really being cautious." That sort of thing. So in the area of physical touch, you know, massages, tickling, you know, tickling is always an intrusion. Just by definition, it's an intrusion. It has no place. You know, sort of with your team, create those three categories: red light, yellow light, green light. What's okay touch? What's we got to be cautious about this, and what's absolutely there's no room for this. And once that's clear, you'll be in a much better position to monitor and confront when confronting needs to happen. Now, again, remember that kids may initiate. You know, we've got a generation of kids that, for all intents and purposes, is hungry for touch, hungry for healthy touch. And so they may initiate in ways where we just have to put the brakes on and say, hey, sorry. Yeah. You know, that's not okay.
Marv, you're yeah. actually, what I really love about what you're doing is, you're talking about paying attention to a lot of cues, a lot of physical cues. I know that,
right.
We're going to need to take a break, and I know that you have, other things that we need to be aware of in our interactions, which I really, really appreciate. But I just, for a moment, I think it's really important, and I hope that youth workers are hearing this when it comes to the physical contact. As so often, one of the things I always speak to youth workers about is make notes, not just mental, but take physical notes on some of your students. So that way you know their lives and what they're doing and what's happening. And I think that the way that you even mentioned, if someone recoils from a touch, paying attention to that, making note of that can actually help with further interaction with the way that you engage and maybe even ways to be praying for that individual.
Right. And then to ramp up the non-physical interactions with that kid. That's the kid that needs lots of verbal affirmation then and needs to be given responsibility, for example, as a way of showing them that you value them. There are all kinds of other ways that we can speak mm-hmm. into the lives of kids if physical touch is something that they are clearly uncomfortable with at every level. And thank you, Jason, for picking up on the fact that so much of this has to do with discernment and wisdom and self-awareness and picking up verbal and nonverbal cues from kids. That's what relationships are. If there were simple formulas that we could impose, and I suppose at some level there are, you know, just don't, we could say that, but I'm not sure that that's where we want to go with this. Much better, as you've picked up, to become aware and sensitive and responsive to what's going on in each relationship. Certainly, there are some lines that can't be crossed in any relationships, but with some kids, you can't even do a fist bump without some sort of a pushback on it.
Well, let me have us pause right there, because I want to continue this, because you mentioned other ways. You also mentioned other areas that we probably need to discuss, and I want to get to those, but we need to take a quick break. So we're going to step away for just one moment, but then come right back and finish our conversation on loving kids well in a Me Too culture. Thanks for listening.
Are you interested in bringing CPYU to your church, school, or community? A big part of our ministry is the on-site seminars we conduct in dozens of settings every year. CPYU seminars are designed to encourage and educate your audience on a variety of youth culture issues. Every seminar is designed to be informative, practical, and hope-filled. If you want to learn more about our CPYU seminars, available speakers, and the many seminar topics and options in our growing seminar lineup, go to our CPYU homepage at cpyu.org. Click on the seminar option on the menu bar at the top of the page, and you can learn more about how to schedule a CPYU speaker and seminar for your parents, youth workers, and educators.
Welcome back to Youth Culture Matters. We're sitting here with Marv Penner talking about loving kids well in a Me Too culture. And I know, Walt, at the break, you had mentioned something just around some of the conversations we're having on this very topic. Do you maybe want to dive into that before we come back to the conversation?
So Marv was talking about the seminar last weekend and the group of youth workers who pushed back on his border and boundary, you know, of no wrestling. And they said that without wrestling, our ministry would be, you know, doomed. I don't know what the, you know, how they actually communicated that, but we'd have nothing, I guess, is what you said, Marv. And I was thinking back, you know, some of what I was actually, you know, you're teaching that now, Marv, And I'm rewinding 15, 20 years to teaching I was doing on middle school ministry, and I would talk about the first day that I showed up to do ministry at the church outside Philadelphia. I was there for 6 years. I had my first middle school meeting, and as I'm standing there talking to a group of students, all of a sudden I just felt this, you know, this mass landed on my back. And it was a seventh grade boy who had just shown up. He knew I was a new youth pastor, and he was welcoming me in the best way that he knew how as a middle schooler. And, you know, I kind of knocked him off, you know, very nicely, and I introduced myself, and I said, listen, game on. You will never, ever show up and surprise me and knock me over. You can try this as much as you want. And for me, that was my way of inviting him into relationship. Now, I soon learned, you know, when you're talking about, you know, cues that we get from kids through behavior and verbally, he had lost his dad at a young age. And so he's being raised by his mom. His dad had died, had cancer. And he was just looking for male relationship and affection. And so, you know, one of the things I would say is to youth workers is over the years, when you identify those kids, those are the kind of kids where, and I thought at the time, I mean, I really still believe this, it was appropriate touch in that setting, worked out well. And you know, he would, all the years I was there, even when he got into high school, I would expect him to come in, even as he got to be a bigger guy, and just surprise me and jump on my back. And he never took me down, which was great. I still wear that as a badge of honor in all those years of him coming after me. But we actually, with our middle school boys, when our meeting was over, we had a bunch of old wrestling mats in the church, and we would throw them down on the floor, and our male leaders would, you know, wrestle around with the guys. And, of course, you know, the downside of it for us then was it got pretty stinky in the room, as you can imagine. But we never saw any other downside to that. And I would say in the training that I did, you know, almost like wrestling with a middle school, with most middle school boys, if they would initiate this and they wanted to engage in it, is like a love language. But I think right. What you're saying now is, you know, okay, it could be a love language, but it can also be very destructive, and it can open Absolutely. The doors for all kinds of bad things, especially in today's world. So I love that. And this is where I think we as youth workers need to be teachable. We need to be aware of what's happening in the culture. We need to be aware of what's happening in kids' lives, as you're saying, and build the appropriate borders and boundaries, even though in some cases, you know, we might be able to do this and it would be a positive thing. Let's default to doing what is the prudent thing. So talk some more about that, Marv. You gave us inappropriate physical contact. Give us some more categories. Just go through those and list those.
Yeah, well, I think that when we talk about verbal interaction, it can cross lines as well. And we need to be really careful. You know, a couple of things specifically. Obviously, any put downs, any unwanted nicknames that we might have for kids that would erode their sense of personal worth is inappropriate. Talking about your own sexual stuff. Talking about. Sex in your marriage. Obviously, if you're doing a sex talk and you want to allude to the fact that sex is a good thing, there's room for that. But even sometimes from up front, we cross lines, make kids uncomfortable, and we need to be really really careful with all of that. One of the areas specifically in terms of verbal interaction that I think we need to be cautious of. Is inappropriate compliments or comments, especially if they have to do with kids' bodies. You know, so, you know, you're a junior high worker and in your fall kickoff event, a girl comes walking in and you're like, whoa, have you ever grown up over the summer? No, that's inappropriate. It's wrong. It's pointing out things that should not in any way define your relationship with that kid. I know from my own ministry, as I look back over 40 plus years, it's my mouth that's gotten me in trouble more often than anything else. And so I just pray that scripture every morning. Lord, put a guard over my lips. I end up saying stupid things far too often. And again, We just need to be conscious of that. So beware in areas of physical or verbal interaction. Ministry, we always say the most effective ministry ratio is one-on-one. That's where you're going to have your greatest impact in mentoring, in those one-on-one conversations where you can take things a little deeper. And I still hold to that. But if you're going to have one-on-one interactions, you need to put some cautions in place. Not just any kind of one-on-one is going to work. So make sure that those one-on-one interactions are happening in an open public area where you're visible. Now, if you're out of earshot, that's not a terrible thing. But set up your youth room in a way that allows for some one-on-one interactions to take place in the big open area where a youth worker can kind of get face-to-face with a kid without it being overheard by everyone, but yet being very visible. That's pretty simple. Open doors. Put windows indoors. We talked about that earlier. That's pretty straightforward. If you're going to be having an offsite one-on-one, you might want to consider letting your supervisor know, or at very least documenting it. Just saying, I'm meeting with Jen at her, at the Starbucks across from her school after school today for half an hour. At least have it documented. And of course, one-on-ones in each other's homes, probably inappropriate for you to have a kid over to your house. And again, I just know that there are a bunch of male youth workers who are listening to me right now saying, man, I have kids over to my house one-on-one to play video games, to watch movies. I have female youth workers saying, I have kids coming over to my house to bake and, you know, it's nothing. We're just making cookies. And I get that. Mm-hmm. I absolutely get that. But if we need to err on the side of caution, we may just need to make those things me and three. I've been promoting the notion of me and three lately. That way, get three kids over, play video games, bake cookies to your heart's content. Me and one, that's where we start wading into some unknown territory. All kinds of caution. And then I want to address, go ahead.
Well, what I just want to make sure this was heard, because I hear a lot of conversation around layout on a lot of youth forums, like what's your layout look like? What are you doing new with the structure of your youth room? And I really appreciated what you brought up with even thinking about, because so often we want to think about what's in the youth room for students to play with, or what's the layout of the chairs, what's the setup of the stage. But I really love just the point that you made. How is your youth room laid out so that you can have these interactions that take place maybe over to the side, but they're still in an open space? So you're actually allowing for your space to function in such a way that allows for these conversations or these opportunities to take place, but in an open forum. And I hope that was heard, because I think that's a really important point as you're thinking about the setup of your room, that this is something that's there. So that was really, really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, it comes back to one of the key words in this conversation, and that is intentionality. So we're actually being purposeful or intentional, even about practical things like how we set up our room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marv, I'm just going to say this. You, when you talked about me and three, it's not that me and one is immoral. It's just the we're not saying that it's wrong. We're just saying that it's wise. And it made me think of Tim Keller's, his definition of wisdom. I'll botch this, I'm sure, but it's basically, wisdom is knowing the right thing to do or the best thing to do when the moral rules don't apply. And what we're talking about here is wisdom, and wisdom that serves as a help to keep us within the borders and boundaries God has established. So best practices.
And again, let me just affirm you guys that, as we're talking about this subject, 98% of the people that we're talking to are probably never going to cross a line. And so, you know, I'm not being paranoid here. I'm not being accusatory. I just want us to be, you use the word prudent and wise. And I think, sadly, we have to err on the side of caution just in the name of prudence and wisdom right now.
Mm. Hey, can you go on and talk about,
you
know, we live in a social media world.
Electronic. Yeah. Electronic interaction. It's a hot topic. You know, do you allow your youth workers to friend kids on social media, or do you create a group where all the interactions again are sort of in the open? Do you allow youth workers to text or Snapchat kids? Just a couple of words of caution on that. First of all, I would say as a youth worker, you should never, ever interact with a kid on a platform that doesn't archive all of your interactions. So if you're using a platform where your interactions disappear, that's a problem. Because if ever an accusation was made, if ever you needed to go back and review, it would be important for you to be able to go back and pull up a thread, pull up a conversation, and say, hey, here's what happened. So make sure that the stuff can be archived. I'm talking to quite a few youth workers these days, and this came up on the DYM forum, where youth pastors are giving parents the option of opting in or out of electronic interactions between youth workers, small group leaders, et cetera, and their kids. So as part of the intake form or the registration form the parents do or whatever, the waivers, they can just check a box and say, hey, I'm okay with the small group leader interacting with my kid, you know, assuming that all the interactions are archived and assuming that I would have access to having a look at that if I needed to. You know, that way, again, we're communicating to parents that they matter. We're giving them a chance to say, nah, you know what? I would rather not have any one-on-one stuff with my kid. No problem. You know, we'll interact with them, in the context of a group, or we'll send the messages to you as a mom or a dad. And again, age has something to do with this. I think when you're dealing with middle schoolers, you know, middle school is now like 10 and 11 years old in some places where fifth and sixth graders are involved. And so for parents to have that freedom to say yes or no, I think communicates to them that we still view them as the primary caregivers for their kids. And that's great. Pictures, be real careful. And by the way, be really, really careful about stuff that you post online with kids' names without permission. If you're posting a picture of a kid, giving their any information that might identify them without their permission or their parents' permission, I think we're on thin ice. We need to be very, very careful about the way we do that. Again, you know, I think group photos of kids on a missions trip or whatever with no identifying information, I mean, even some would consider that to be dangerous, but be real careful about posting individual kids' pictures, especially if it's in any way compromising kids in a bathing suit, you know, at a retreat or whatever. Just, again, err on the side of caution. And like I said, right up top in this conversation, I hate that we're having to have it, but we have to have it. Maybe this will just give people a new awareness of some of the dangers that are out there today.
Hey, I was thinking we could combine one of the things you said about inappropriate verbal interaction with the electronic interaction, and that
right.
is, you know, the comments, compliments, comments about appearance.
Yep.
So a girl posts a selfie. And
right.
it's as many selfies are now because we know, well, with the guys too, they can be provocative in nature,
right.
or they're just fishing for likes, you know, the social capital of the
right.
likes and the OMG, you look so hot, that sort of thing. It's not wise. It's
Hotness
not wise and
is
it's not
how
helpful.
We evaluate our kids.
Right. And we don't, it's not wise and it's not helpful to post a like on those things. So, you
right.
know, it's better to just have conversations about things that matter than trying to affirm them, you know, with that kind of stuff. Yeah, this is good. Hey, Marv.
Hey,
go ahead.
I would love if we have a chance. I know we're running out of time, Walt, but I would love. I've thought through just some of the. You know, we talked about self awareness, self monitoring, and I wrote a book a few years ago called "Help My Kids Are Hurting," and I addressed this issue there.
Great book.
And just thought through what are some of the red flags that I need to monitor in my own heart. To avoid, inappropriate entanglements of any kind. And if you've got time, I would love to just toss a few of those out for discussion consideration. Yeah. So obviously, if you find yourself having sexual thoughts or relational fantasies about a kid, if they have become the object of lust, like let's just call it what it is. That is a red flag that is screaming caution. So if you find yourself focusing on one kid and they become sort of the subject of sexual fantasy or lust, no room whatsoever for that. But more subtly, if you find that you're feeling jealous when you see a student spending time with a fellow youth worker, if you see them deepening their relationship and you find yourself sort of almost in a junior high jealous kind of way going, hey, you know, she's my friend. You can't have a relationship with her. He's my guy. That's completely, completely inappropriate. If you find yourself looking for excuses to be together with that one kid as often as possible. And here's the self-monitoring piece. If you find yourself looking forward to how you're going to feel when you're with that kid, that they're in some sort of an inappropriate way affirming your value or, bolstering your sense of self-esteem, making you feel like more of a man or more of a woman when you're with them, that's a huge red flag. If somebody comes to you, your spouse, a fellow youth worker, even one of the kids who is saying, hey, there's something wrong with your relationship. If someone is sensing, if they're expressing concerns about your relationship, that's something you need to really take carefully. Don't get defensive. Just receive it and reevaluate. That's really, really important. If you find yourself flirting with kids, kind of dancing with that line of appropriateness or inappropriateness, that flirtatious behavior where you enjoy the power that your flirtation gives you. Again, this has to be self-monitored, but so important for you to do that. If you find yourself feeling self-conscious about how you feel when you're with that kid, am I making a good impression? Do they like me? How am I doing? That kind of stuff, just so wrong. If you find, and this one's huge, if you find yourself probing for information that could be sexually explicit or could fuel fantasy under the umbrella of counseling them. So if you're asking them questions because that's going to fuel your fantasy, completely inappropriate. Red flags waving. And then probably the most dangerous situation that you could find yourself in is if you find yourself listening even to what we've been saying here over the course of this last hour, and you are saying, hey, that would never be an issue for me. It's no big deal. I'm exempt from this kind of stuff. That may be important information for other people. If you find yourself rationalizing your relationships with kids, saying, I'm immune to that, that is probably the most dangerous response. There but by the grace of God go any of us. And if you become complacent or if you can somehow exempt yourself from having to listen carefully to what we've been talking about today, that immediately puts you in a place of danger. And let me just say one more really, really hard thing. It grieves me that I have to say this, but I say it every opportunity I have. And that is,
if you find yourself in a place of compromise, if you feel that you're vulnerable to inappropriate relationships with kids, you know, if you've been Googling teen porn, let's call it what it is. If you've been looking for opportunities to fuel that fantasy, then please step away from youth ministry. Don't take down a whole ministry. Don't take down a group of kids. Don't take down an individual because you don't have the courage to step away and deal with whatever it is that's creating that vulnerability in you. It would be far better for you to step aside than to continue to put yourself in a place of danger. You know, the old, you know, it would be inappropriate for an alcoholic to be a bartender. If you've got a vulnerability, then recognize it and act on it. I know that's a downer, Walt, to end with. Do we have something happy we can talk about at the end here?
Yeah, we will. We'll get to that.
Good.
But I want to say this in response to that. You are not saying that as if it's a possibility. You know that you and Jason and me, we have all experienced that and lived that with friends in youth ministry. So,
and Walt, I will distinguish myself from you and Jason then and say, I have lived with that in my ministry.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to talk about friends. I know that I need to guard my heart every single day of my life, you know, because the enemy's prowling.
Yeah.
So I'll take ownership.
We talk about this. Duffy and I go over this all the time about the need for a deep and very realistic understanding of our human brokenness and the depravity that we have that's inside of us.
Absolutely.
Because we don't understand the gift of grace and God's mercy through Christ, nor do we understand how prone we all are to this. None of us is above this. As you said before, there but for the grace of God go I. And I know Jason would agree with that, as do yeah. I. So, Chris as well. So, yeah, Marv, this is good. So, just a couple of things here. Marv, you've mentioned some things. We've talked about some resources. We've talked about some things to watch, I think, on Netflix over the course of our time together here. As always, if our listeners go to cpyu.org and click on the page for this podcast where there is a player, and I know many people will access this through other platforms, podcast platforms, I get that, but come back to our page, because if you go back to our page after listening, you will find that Chris Wagner here has put up all of the resources, links to those things that have been mentioned, so that it's easy Great. For you to access those things, so that will be there. I do want to say one thing and as we finish up here, and that is, this is the happy note, we're all going to see each other very shortly. This podcast will be up before the National Youth Workers Convention in St. Louis.
Yeah, in St. Louis, yeah.
So we'll all be there, and we want to invite everybody. Keep an eye out for Marv. Plug into what he's doing. I'll be there teaching. Jason's going to be coming along, and he's going to have a presence there as well, so look for Jason. And I'm going to throw this out. You know, I was at, as you were, Marv, about a month ago, we were at DYM 200 that our friend Doug Fields ran. And
right.
It was my pleasure to be a guest on a podcast called, Jeff Bachman's podcast called What It Is, What It Means on Youth Culture. And when I sat down, and we did this live, a bunch of youth workers came and sat down, and some of them were like ravenous. You know, they were like sharks saying to Jeff, do you have a sticker? Do you have a sticker? I want a sticker. And Jeff was handing out these little stickers with a podcast logo on it.
Yeah.
And I realized that youth workers these days, they live for stickers. So the good news is we had some Youth Culture Matters stickers made. I'm looking at one right now. Chris has it over there sitting on the computer. And it's a nice little sticker. And if you – we're not going to be, like, throwing these things out there. But if you find Jason, if you find me – I know Kenton's going to be there. Maybe Kenton's making a return, right? He's doing youth ministry right now. He's not with us.
And Walt, I'll carry some in my pocket.
Oh yeah, we'll give some to Marv as well. And so if you just come up to us, I don't have a password or anything like that. Just, you know, rudely, brutally say, "Give me a sticker," and we'll give you a sticker. So we have stickers. So letting the folks who listen are going to be at National Youth Workers Convention.
Man, what goes around comes around, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's a blessing for us to be able to bestow valuable gifts on youth workers. So I think they're worth what, Chris, each? Penny? Not even that,
yeah,
huh?
A few cents.
A few cents each, yeah. So we'll throw that on you. But Jason, any parting words as we
finish?
No,
that's great. Just pay attention to the resources on the page because they're going to be really helpful.
Good. All right, folks. Thanks for joining us today. Marv,
thanks for the opportunity. Let's talk about something happy next time.
Yeah, we will. And Marv, I appreciate the hard work you do on these things because it's so necessary. And as I always say, you know, what I love is, you know, your experience, your years of accumulated wisdom and being willing to pass that on. That's just such good stewardship of that. So all
of us,
thank you.
Well, let me just say that if people want this training live, just get in touch with CPYU.
Yeah.
And I'll be happy to come and talk about this and other related issues in your community with you and your youth workers. So let's make this part of the CPYU offering. And let's have these conversations wherever we can.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because all people have to do is go to our cpyu.org and look under seminars, and there's a long list, and that it's not even exhaustive. There's so much more we do, and Jason's
mentioned
there. Well,
why don't you add this one to the list?
We will. We'll add this. Chris is on it.
I'll get it.
And
good.
Marv's listed there. I'm listed there. And Jason and I will do things together. We've got some stuff that we do that are part of our sexual integrity initiative. We'll come in and minister to parents and the teens together. And then Marv and I have done numerous things together with tackling the tough stuff and so on. So we'd be happy to do that. We'd love to come to your community. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening in. And we'll talk to you next time on the next episode of Youth Culture Matters.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.